back to Let's Talk Future. I'm your host, Jane Ross, and I'm here with Jay Olson of Oppenheimer to talk about longevity. Jay's been exploring this area from a biotech perspective for quite some time. And last year, we recorded an episode that focused on whether longevity approaches are realistic and investable, and what are the innovations that could result in longer health spans. That episode garnered a lot of interest, and since that time, a lot has happened. Private equity, pharmaceutical companies, billionaires all continue to invest in longevity, and we have a lot more data and info because obesity drug uses continues to grow. So I'm looking forward to talking about all of this with you, Jay, and welcome back to Let's Talk Future.
Hi, Jane, and thank you for inviting me back. It's a real pleasure to join you and chat about this exciting topic. It's been a while since we last spoke, and a lot has evolved, starting with the way we describe the key concept. Some people think of longevity as an esoteric goal that is pursued by billionaires who want to live longer. But as you indicated, our focus is more related to health span, that is, living healthier, more functional, and higher quality lives to narrow the gap between our health span and our lifespan. So we prefer to describe our idea as healthy aging, which seems to resonate better with all parties involved, including healthcare systems and investors.
And it sounds very simple, health spans, improving health spans. And before we get into some of your more, you know, scientific stuff, what are some of the low-tech things that our listeners should be taking advantage of now?
It's a great point. There are a lot of beneficial things we can do now, and it goes beyond all the healthy lifestyle choices that we already know about, like getting exercise, eating, and sleeping well. For example, social connectivity has emerged as an important part of maintaining our physical and mental health. I interviewed an Alzheimer's expert who told me that social isolation is one of the greatest risk factors for both neurodegeneration and heart disease. So stay connected with family, friends, and even pets is a fun and easy way to maintain your brain and heart health. Related to that, we all lose hearing sensitivity as we get older. So get your hearing checked to monitor this risk, since hearing loss can contribute to decreased social interactions, and it can often be addressed with simple solutions like hearing aids.
And hearing aids have gotten a whole lot better. There's AI and there's all sorts of great innovations. Okay, so that's some of the low-tech stuff. Give us a sense of some of the more scientific approaches to longevity that are being pursued.
Yeah, absolutely. We've explored some of the more promising scientific advancements, and there are a few, including cellular rejuvenation, which was the subject of a recent article in the New York Times. And there are other approaches, including metabolic restoration, declining metabolism, exercise mimetics to replicate the benefits of zone 2 exercise, and xenotherapy to eliminate harmful cells from our bodies. But the important thing to keep in mind here with these experimental approaches is that they are not solely focused on living longer, they are instead focused on health span.
Right. So again, could you remind us what's the difference between lifespan and health span?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the gap between health span and lifespan is actually quite significant and is growing. Globally, it has widened by about 13% over the past two decades to roughly 9.6 years. So what that means in plain terms is that people are living longer, but a meaningful portion of those extra years are spent managing disease or disability rather than truly thriving. The United States actually has the largest such gap of any country studied, about 12.4 years, which is larger than the global average of around 9.2 years. So this is a very real, very measurable problem, and it's a big part of why we think healthy aging represents such a compelling investment opportunity.
Right. So 12.4 years when people are dealing with disease or cognitive decline, stuff like that. Okay, well, why don't we focus on brain health for a minute there and talk about some of the innovations that you see are happening? I know there have been some drug tests looking at Alzheimer's. What's going on there?
Yeah, that's right, Jane. There's evidence that GLP-1 drugs have benefits that extend beyond weight loss and include brain health. Based on these findings, Novo Nordisk invested in an Alzheimer's study with their GLP-1 drug, semaglutide. Unfortunately, that study didn't show a benefit, but it's possible they studied patients who were too advanced. And if the study had been done earlier in the course of disease as a prevention study, then it could possibly have shown a benefit. So I wouldn't fully eliminate the idea that GLP-1 drugs may help reduce the risk of Alzheimer's disease and other degenerative disorders like Parkinson's and movement disorders, which all have deep ties to aging biology, alongside psychiatric health, which we feel is an underappreciated contributor to both lifespan and quality of life. Early intervention is the thread here that ties all of this together. And the pressure isn't just on developing medicines, but also finding new diagnostic testing that is able to detect disease early before symptoms arise. Together, these tools are what make the whole preventive medicine model work. The earlier you can identify risks, the more time there is to intervene meaningfully. That is ultimately what healthy aging is all about.
Okay. And so healthy aging, again, I know you've spent a lot of time focusing on obesity drugs as an investable way to achieve healthy aging. And, you know, since our last conversation, these drugs have continued to grow, right?
That's right. And I'm glad that you mentioned obesity as a foundation for longevity. Interestingly, diabetes was a foundation for obesity. The two most successful obesity drugs, which as you indicated are still growing, Novo's Wegovy and Lilly's Zepbound, both started off as treatments for diabetes. So there's clear precedent for treatment of one disease to drive advances into other related disease areas. And remember, we're focusing on obesity in our longevity discussion because it's such an important risk factor for many diseases of aging, such as heart disease, kidney disease, osteoarthritis, sleep disorders, and certain forms of neurodegeneration like Alzheimer's disease. So treating obesity by losing weight and maintaining a healthy weight can help prevent these diseases of aging because, after all, obesity is an accelerated form of aging. So treating obesity forms the foundation to support healthy aging. It's also based on preventative medicine, which is where we believe the practice of medicine needs to evolve.
Right. Okay. So as the population continues to use these drugs, what are some of the things that you're learning?
Yeah, one key learning is that we're starting to see a more nuanced view of what obesity even means. Traditional measures like BMI are increasingly recognized as inadequate on their own. New guidelines are incorporating things like waist circumference and direct measurements of body fat through imaging, for example. And they're also distinguishing between what's being called clinical obesity, where excess fat is already impairing organ function, and preclinical obesity, where someone has excess fat, but their organs are still functioning normally, so they may appear to be metabolically healthy. That distinction between clinical and preclinical obesity matters enormously for prevention because it creates a rationale for intervening earlier before serious disease sets in. That is exactly the kind of preventive medicine framework we've been advocating. And there's a form of excess fat that exists in patients with normal BMI who have high visceral fat and are commonly known as skinny fat. These patients are at elevated risk for age-related diseases like type 2 diabetes and fatty liver disease. And they're difficult to treat because they don't necessarily need to lose weight, but instead they need to improve their body composition by gaining lean muscle mass while reducing fat, which is a weight-neutral outcome.
Right, okay. And so given all that, what are some of the practical takeaways from this line of thinking? You know, we target obesity because it leads to so many other things. That's where you're going, right?
That's right, Jane. Some of the large pharma companies are talking about healthy aging publicly, although it's taken them a while to actually use those words. In fact, at a major aging research conference last year, an Eli Lilly scientist described GLP-1s as potentially the world's first longevity drug. And Novo Nordisk chief scientific officer gave a presentation titled Semaglutide as a Proven Longevity Medicine. That was a genuine landmark moment. We think large pharmaceutical companies have historically avoided associating themselves with longevity because it sounded speculative. So hearing this language from the biggest names in the obesity space was a significant signal to us that perspectives in the industry are changing and they're becoming much more longevity oriented. That said, actions speak louder than words, and research focused on prevention of age-related disease is a key bellwether that we use as the basis for our observations.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to ask you about, because actions speak louder than words. What have we learned about some of the other practical things that are going on? You know, I read a lot about discontinuation rates being quite high. So what are we learning about that?
Yes, that's true. Roughly half of patients who start these weight loss treatments end up stopping them, partly because current drugs don't necessarily work well for everyone, and partly due to side effects and the painful weekly injections. But a more important issue is that once patients stop current weight loss drugs like Wegovy and Zepbound, most patients who discontinue regain a significant portion of their weight back, usually in fat and not muscle. Therefore, the maintenance opportunity is significant. There's a real need for therapies that help people sustain healthy weight over the long term, not just induce initial weight loss, because as patients cycle on and off weight loss drugs, their body composition becomes more fat dominated, which has its own downstream implications for overall health.
So as they go on and off these things, they may have a more fat dominated body mass. That doesn't sound good. So what are the fixes for that?
It's a great question, and one potential innovation here is dosing frequency, which could be important in chronic maintenance settings based on needle fatigue from weekly injections. There are several examples of companies working on less frequent dosing, which we can discuss in more detail in a moment.
Okay, and not just, you know, body composition, but I read a lot about the loss of muscle when you use these drugs, and that's a big problem here, isn't it?
Absolutely. Muscle loss is such a large problem with GLP-1 based drugs, partly due to caloric restriction. In fact, data from Lilly's SURMOUNT-1 trial showed that approximately one quarter of the total weight lost on tirzepatide was lean mass, meaning muscle, rather than fat. And that matters because lean mass loss in middle-aged and older adults is associated with roughly a 30% increased risk of all-cause mortality. So you're solving one problem, that is obesity, and potentially exacerbating another problem in muscle loss, which is already problematic as we grow older. We expect the next generation of drugs will focus on energy expenditure and muscle preservation. There's a particular biological pathway involving a protein called activin E, encoded by the inhibin E gene, that looks very promising as a target for fat-selective, muscle-sparing weight loss. Two companies, Wave and iBio, are actively working in this area, so we're watching early clinical data in the area very closely.
Okay. And where else are you focused in longevity?
Well, you know, potentially these next generation approaches will also address inflammation, which brings us to another opportunity for innovation related to healthy aging. You can't talk about healthy aging without talking about inflammation. We believe inflammation is an important and underappreciated piece of the healthy aging story. GLP-1 drugs have been shown to reduce the signaling molecules that drive systemic inflammation throughout the body. Chronic inflammation is increasingly understood as a root cause of many diseases of aging, including heart disease, neurodegeneration, and metabolic disorders. So the anti-inflammatory properties of weight loss drugs may be doing additional work alongside the weight loss itself. Next generation drugs that target broad inflammation more directly, things like NLRP3 inhibitors, could become important tools in the healthy aging toolkit.
You talked about some of the scientific avenues at the start of this conversation and epigenetics, you know, trying to alter the way cells act and prevent some aging actions, right? So what other companies are working in those spaces?
Yeah, so Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk are both working on all of those, including inflammation targeting pathways like NLRP3 and IL-6. Which are key drivers of systemic chronic inflammation. For chronic maintenance of healthy weight, Amgen and Viking Therapeutics are both making significant progress. Amgen will have weight loss maintenance data that could support injectable dosing once every 2 or 3 months, which would be a significant improvement over existing weekly injections and well-suited for healthy aging. Viking is also interesting for maintenance because their lead drug, VK2735, it's both an injectable and an oral formulation in development, which we think gives patients real flexibility on dosing and maintenance, which Viking is exploring in an ongoing clinical trial. Clinical data has also shown that VK2735 significantly reduces inflammatory markers, lowers blood pressure, and reverses prediabetes in a meaningful proportion of patients. To us, that combination of effects make it potentially well-suited for the broader healthy aging story and not just weight loss.
Right. And, you know, again, as we talk about healthy aging, we're talking about, you know, efforts to try to retain muscle mass. But another area that seems challenging is energy levels and trying to, you know, have a decent level of energy as we age, right?
That's right. And energy expenditure and muscle mass are closely related. As I mentioned, roughly a quarter to a third of the weight lost on current drugs is muscle, not fat. For a 50-year-old trying to stay functional and healthy into their 70s and 80s, that's a serious problem because losing muscle accelerates physical decline, raises mortality risk, and it works directly against the health span goals that we've been talking about. So this is an area we find especially exciting because it gets at one of the most fundamental unsolved problems in the obesity space. For preservation of lean muscle mass and increased energy expenditure, companies like Wave and iBio are targeting, as I mentioned, the pathway inhibin E, codes for the protein activin E. And based on emerging data, inhibiting this pathway appears to allow for fat-selective weight loss with more muscle mass spared. If this trend can hold in larger clinical trials with longer follow-up, these drugs would offer a meaningful clinical advancement over anything currently on the market.
And related to that, you know, you're talking about sort of a very selective process. One of the things that we touched on in our last conversation was the importance of the personalization of all of these approaches. And that's important to talk about too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Market segmentation is something we look forward to as these approaches become more personalized. Personalization is going to become more and more important in this space. We draw the precision medicine analogy from cancer treatment, where oncology has led the way in showing that identifying the right patient for the right drug can transform outcomes. And we believe the same logic is now coming to metabolic disease and healthy aging. We can think of some natural market segmentations based on epidemiological observations. Distinct market segments will drive further innovation, and the use of blood-based diagnostic tests may help identify patients most likely to respond to certain drugs and therefore support a more personalized approach to healthy aging.
Right. And again, when we talk about, you know, personalization, we still have to focus on prevention. And I know a common theme through all of your work is early detection and prevention.
Yes, we certainly see the benefits of prevention with the huge market for heart health drugs like statins and PCSK9s. For example, that distinction that we talked about earlier between clinical and preclinical obesity creates a clear segmentation opportunity. Patients with preclinical obesity, that is excess fat but functioning organs, represent a prevention market that already somewhat exists today in pharmaceutical terms, especially for heart health drugs like statins and PCSK9s. Treating them before they progress to clinical disease is exactly the kind of primary prevention model that we think will define the next decade of the industry. Wall Street analysts forecast the total obesity and healthy aging drug market exceeding $100 billion in annual revenue by the mid-2030s, and we think that estimate could prove conservative once the full preventive medicine opportunity is properly valued. There are other natural segmentations based on observations, for example, that women respond better to GLP-1 drugs than men, and differentiating between premenopausal versus postmenopausal women could also represent a further refinement to that segmentation opportunity.
Yeah, that's not even anything we got into here, the difference between men and women, and that, well, that's another future episode, Jay. All right, well, we've covered a lot here. We have innovation, we have obesity drugs, we have social connection, we have hearing aids, we have muscle mass, we have personalization. Any closing thoughts from you before we wrap this up?
Well, thank you, Jane, for another fascinating discussion. We believe our thesis on obesity drugs as a gateway to healthy aging has so far proven correct, and our prediction is there will be additional areas of innovation for drug research, especially along the lines of chronic weight maintenance, muscle preservation, increased energy expenditure, reduced inflammation, and personalized medicine focused on prevention.
There you have it. Thank you so much, Jade.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jane.